Declaro abierta la sexta.
The sixth meeting of the ninth session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is called to order.
Por favor, silencio.
Silence in the hall, please. Could the delegates please take their seats? Distinguished members of the Forum on Indigenous Issues, today is Earth Day, and the Forum has decided to hold a brief ceremony which will be performed by an Indigenous youth. I invite Mr. Tuomas Aslak Fuso of the Sami people to join me on the podium and offer a greeting. Mr. Tuomas.
Buenos días.
Thank you.
Gracias, señor Aslak. Para nosotros.
Thank you, Mr. Aslak. For us, for the indigenous peoples, it's very important to recall this important link that we have with the earth, with Mother Earth. And we've heard about that profound bond in many of our statements, and it is a bond which is at the basis of our rights. At this meeting, we shall continue our discussion on item 4. A, implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. B, dialogue with the Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of Indigenous Peoples and other special rapporteurs. Can the interpretation be heard? Is there a problem with the interpretation? Can the interpretation be heard?
Entonces vamos a tomar un minuto.
We'll take a minute to solve this problem.
Vamos a pedir a la secretaria.
We're going to ask the secretariat to provide us with some information on the interpretation system.
I just want to comment for everybody so that nobody would be lost in the meeting that this new equipment that we have is marvelous, but we have to know how it works. And it works on the right-hand side. You will see a small window that shows to you the channel for the languages through which the interpretation is provided. And on the right of that window, on the side, there is a small wheel that regulates the volume. kindly feel free to make it up to the volume that's comfortable to you. I just checked the we have the interpretation on all channels and all languages, so everything is fine and we can proceed with the meeting. Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. We'll continue. Under item 4A, the permanent forum will hear introductory remarks by Mr. James Anaya, United Nations Special Rapporteur, on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous people. The forum will also hear a statement from Ms. Jen Lasimbang, chairperson of the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Also, under item 4B, the forum will hold a dialogue with the Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of Indigenous people and other Special Rapporteurs. After Mr. James Anaya and Ms. Jen Lasimbang have spoken and a dialogue has been held, I shall open the floor to the participants inscribed on the speakers list to make their statements on agenda item 4A. I have a number of member states and international organizations and agencies on my list. I now invite Mr. James Anaya, UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous People, to join us on the podium.
De la misma forma invitamos a otro.
And we invite other rapporteurs who may be in the hall as well. I give the floor to Mr. James Anaya, United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous People. You have the floor, Mr. Anaya.
Gracias, señor presidente.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members of the Permanent Forum, representatives of Indigenous peoples and member states, friends and colleagues, I'm very grateful to once again have the opportunity to address the Permanent Forum and all those attending this session. And I'd like to share some of my experiences during my second year as Special Rapporteur and provide some reflections on the theme of this ninth session of the Forum, which is Indigenous Peoples' Right to Development with Culture and Identity. Mr. Chairman, allow me first of all to congratulate you on your election as chairperson of the Permanent Forum. Your experience and dedication to Indigenous issues is no doubt a tremendous asset to your leadership of this important United Nations body, whose members I have the pleasure of joining today in what I expect will be a fruitful dialogue on issues of common concern. Mr. Chairperson, the second year of my mandate as Special Rapporteur, in this second year, I have sought to continue coordination with the Permanent Forum as well as with the Human Rights Council's expert mechanism on the rights of Indigenous people. One of the specific outcomes of our coordination efforts is the holding of parallel meetings with Indigenous peoples and organizations during the sessions of the Permanent Forum and Expert Mechanism. I have worked to provide Indigenous groups attending the annual sessions of the Permanent Forum and Expert Mechanism with the opportunity to present in person specific information about situations their peoples are facing. I would like to thank all of those who submitted requests for meetings and information about matters to discuss during this week. Unfortunately, due to time constraints, I am not able to meet with all of those who requested meetings. Nonetheless, I do commit to examine all of the cases that have been brought to my attention, including about those situations which I'm unable to meet to discuss this week. Indigenous peoples and organizations should be aware that, in accordance with my mandate from the United Nations Human Rights Council, I routinely consider and, in appropriate cases, act upon written information submitted to me without face-to-face meetings or country visits. For those who wish to submit information, my coordinates are on the website that the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights maintains for my mandate, and also in a brochure that is being made available in this conference room. Mr. Chairperson, while seeking to cooperate as appropriate with relevant international mechanisms and institutions, I have engaged in a range of activities within the terms of my mandate to monitor the human rights conditions of indigenous peoples worldwide and to promote steps to improve those conditions. As I conveyed last year to the Permanent Forum, the various activities I carry out can be described as falling within four interrelated categories of work. These are promoting good practices, thematic studies, country reports, and responding to cases of alleged violations of human rights of indigenous peoples. The activities that I have carried out over the past year in relation to each of these areas of work are identified in my detailed written statement or comments to the Permanent Forum, and this is available here as a conference room paper. Since assuming my mandate, I have worked to advance legal, administrative, and programmatic reforms at the domestic level and in the area of international cooperation to implement the standards of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and other relevant international instruments. On occasion, this has been in response to specific requests by governments for technical and advisory assistance. For example, in December, I carried out a visit to Ecuador to assist with the development of a new law to strengthen the recognition of and respect for indigenous justice systems within the context of advancing the implementation of new constitutional protections for indigenous rights in the face of ongoing challenges in that country. Among the good practices I have sought to advance is the endorsement of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples by those states that failed to cast affirmative votes for it upon its adoption by the General Assembly in 2007. I am very pleased, therefore, that the government of New Zealand announced its support for the Declaration on the first day of this session of the Permanent Forum, thereby strengthening the already widespread international commitment to the principles and aspirations of the Declaration. And I also note, with a good deal of satisfaction, the statement made by the United States of America on Tuesday that it will review its position on the Declaration in light of its domestic laws and policies. These developments follow the speech from the throne by the Governor General of Canada on March 3, in which the government stated that it will take steps to endorse the Declaration in a manner fully consistent with Canada's constitution and laws. The United States and Canada are thus close to joining the vast majority of United Nations member states that support the Declaration, and thereby making opposition by some states to the Declaration a thing of the past. I respectfully urge that any formal statement of endorsement by states of the Declaration be made in a manner that is fully consistent with the Declaration's terms, interpreted as they should be in light of the spirit and objectives of the Declaration and the practical realities faced by indigenous peoples, as well as in light of the full range of applicable human rights norms and legitimate considerations of democratic governance. Mr. Chairperson, related to the promotion of good practices is my work conducting or participating in issues or themes that are of interest to indigenous peoples across borders and regions of the world, or studies on issues of interest to indigenous peoples across borders of the world. In my report to the Human Rights Council last year, I included a discussion of the duty of states to consult with indigenous peoples in light of the Declaration and other relevant instruments. In my third annual report to the Human Rights Council, I intend to include reflections on the issue of extractive industries, drawing in part from discussions advanced in a seminar I attended last October in Sitges, Spain, as well as from the work of the Permanent Forum on the topic. Additionally, Mr. Chairperson, since I last reported to the Permanent Forum, I have carried out visits to several countries for the purpose of developing reports to assess the human rights conditions of indigenous peoples in those countries, including visits to Colombia, Australia, the Russian Federation, and most recently, the Sapmi region, the traditional territory of the Sami people in the Nordic countries. As mentioned earlier, Mr. Chairperson, an ongoing aspect of my work involves receiving and, in appropriate cases, acting upon information of alleged violations of the rights of indigenous peoples in specific situations. I have made a concerted effort to engage with governments about credible information of alleged rights violations in specific cases in which I believe my intervention may be of some use. On occasion, this process has involved on-site visits to examine particular cases, such as my visit to Peru last July to assess the tragic events around Bagua. In this and several other cases, I have submitted observations and recommendations to governments involved with the hope that these will assist the governments in developing workable and long-term approaches to addressing the situations. Mr. Chairperson, I would now like to offer some brief comments related to the theme of this session of the Permanent Forum, which is Indigenous Peoples' Development with Culture and Identity. The right to development is a right of all peoples, including indigenous peoples. The United Nations Declaration on the Right to Development of 1986 affirms in its Article 1 that development is an inalienable right of every person and all peoples. While indigenous peoples have the right to develop in common with the broader communities and societies in which they live, they have particular concerns that must at all times be taken into account with regard to development initiatives that affect them. These concerns stem from the extreme disadvantages that indigenous peoples typically have faced across a range of social and economic indicators, the dispossession of lands and natural resources, their historical exclusion from state decision-making, and their aspirations to maintain and transmit to future generations their distinct identities and cultures. I see two broad areas of concern arising from development programs affecting indigenous peoples. One area has to do with those policies and initiatives aimed at the development of the economy or infrastructure of the state generally, and that are said to benefit the people of the state as a whole, but that may have negative effects on indigenous peoples. These often include development programs involving the extraction of natural resources and mega projects such as the construction of dams and transportation facilities on indigenous peoples' territories. A second area of concern has to do with those development initiatives by states pursued often with the backing of international actors or donors that are targeted specifically at indigenous peoples and at improving their social and economic conditions. In my reports assessing the human rights situations of indigenous peoples in various countries, I detail government policies and programs that are targeted at key issues associated with indigenous peoples' development, including those related to indigenous health, education, and poverty reduction. Despite many positive developments in several countries, I have observed in general the need to incorporate into state programs of this type a more integrated approach to addressing the development of indigenous peoples, one that aims to secure for them not just social and economic well-being, but that in doing so also advances their self-determination and their rights to maintain their distinct cultural identities, languages, and connections with traditional lands. Self-determination in the development process is a matter of basic human dignity for indigenous peoples as for all others. Enhancing indigenous self-determination has also been shown to be conducive to successful practical outcomes. And indigenous people who make their own decisions about development have been shown to consistently fare better than indigenous peoples who do not. Mr. Chairperson, on the basis of my experience and of what I have learned from indigenous peoples in various settings, I believe a number of specific objectives must be pursued to enhance indigenous self-determination in the development process. Among these is the objective of enhancing indigenous education and skills capacity in relevant areas. Indigenous peoples are rich in knowledge, but are often lacking in the skills and levels of education necessary to themselves engage and participate in the various components of development programs and projects that affect them in the modern world. In my experience as Special Rapporteur, I have observed many state programs oriented at improving the education of indigenous peoples, and these programs should be consolidated and strengthened in ways that I have outlined in more detail in my reports. But beyond increasing indigenous peoples' educational opportunities in general, states and the international community should endeavor to promote the training and capacity building necessary to allow indigenous peoples to adequately understand, design, and implement development activities within or affecting their communities. While many development projects in various countries include programs for some training and employment opportunities for affected indigenous communities, all too often, indigenous people are not seen as potential engineers, business administrators, environmental analysts, lawyers, or other professionals with the skills that are necessary for the execution of the projects at the managerial level. I firmly believe that ensuring professional training for indigenous peoples that allows their full involvement in the design and delivery of development-related activities should be part of any vision for development as it concerns them. Further, it is apparent from experiences worldwide that the capacity of indigenous peoples to successfully pursue their own development priorities requires the strengthening of their own institutions and self-government structures. This will empower them to take control of their own affairs in all aspects of their lives and to ensure that the development processes are aligned with their own cultural patterns, values, customs, and worldviews. In this regard, I echo the statements I have heard from indigenous leaders around the world about the need for indigenous peoples themselves to continue to strengthen their own organizational and local self-governance capacities in order to meet the challenges faced by their communities with respect to development, including complex decisions regarding natural resource extraction on their lands. Related to capacity building and strengthening of self-government, indigenous peoples should be provided the opportunity to participate as equal partners in the development process when both their particular interests and the interests of the larger societies of which they form part are implicated. In my experience as Special Rapporteur, especially in my conversations with states and representatives of private industry, I have observed in general a lack of consideration of options for indigenous peoples to be real partners in development activities. Real partnership would require indigenous peoples to be able to genuinely influence decisions concerning development activities, fully participate in their design and implementation, and directly benefit from any economic or other gains that are derived from them. Finally, I would like to emphasize that indigenous peoples must be allowed the opportunity to continue to progress and improve decision-making concerning development on their own terms and to remedy any shortcomings through their own forms of internal regulation and accountability. States and other actors should take care to avoid conditioning their development assistance for indigenous communities on predetermined outcomes that are presumed by the outsiders to be the correct outcomes. In other words, indigenous peoples must be allowed the opportunity to make mistakes, to learn from those mistakes, and to build ever greater capacity and wisdom in their own development objectives and choices about the future. Mr. Chairperson, I would like to conclude by reiterating my gratitude for the opportunity to address the distinguished members of the Permanent Forum and the representatives of the states and indigenous peoples who are present. I reaffirm my commitment to cooperating with the Permanent Forum in our common pursuit of securing the full enjoyment of the human rights of indigenous peoples. This pursuit is one of daunting challenges, But I am encouraged by the many challenges that have already been overcome, by the persistence of indigenous peoples to see their aspirations realized, and by the constant possibilities of further progress into a better future. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, and all those present for your kind attention.
Gracias, Professor Anaya, por...
I thank Professor Anaya for sharing with us information on your work, your visits to indigenous communities and peoples on different continents where there are indigenous peoples. And we're grateful to you for the comments that you've made in relation to the specific theme of this session, Development with Culture and Identity. And we thank you for emphasizing respect for the right to self-determination as indigenous peoples. Thank you, Mr. Anaya. Our second speaker is Ms. Jen Lasimbang, the chairperson of the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I invite Ms. Lasimbang to join us on the podium. Ms. Lasimbang, you have the floor.
Privosian, greetings to everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, representatives of Indigenous peoples and member states, colleagues. I want to thank you for this opportunity to address the forum, and let me first congratulate you on your election as a chairperson. I'm also pleased to be here when New Zealand endorsed the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples at the opening of the forum, which the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples strongly welcome. I believe this, together with Australia's endorsement last year, shows that consensus around the declaration is further strengthened. It is also encouraging to note that US and Canada are reviewing their position. Mr. Chairperson, allow me to provide a brief breakdown of the Expert Mechanism, or called MRIP for short. MRIP's mandate is to provide advice, mainly through studies and through proposals on the rights of Indigenous peoples, to the Human Rights Council, the main body dealing with human rights at the UN. While having neither the capacity to deal with country situation nor the mandate to monitor the implementation of the declaration, in my view, we can contribute to a better understanding of the provisions of the declaration and how to translate them into concrete measures. The third session, the upcoming session of the Expert Mechanism, will take place in Geneva from 12 to the 16th of July this year. As a specific forum to discuss the right of Indigenous peoples, it is open to all, including organizations without ECOSOC status. The Expert Mechanism, the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and the Special Rapporteur coordinates among ourselves by participating in annual sessions, making substantive contribution to our work and studies, as well as through coordination meetings. MRIP has also developed close working relationship with other universal and regional human rights mechanisms, including treaty bodies and other working groups, including the African Commission on Indigenous Population and Communities. I believe that for MRIP to become an effective vehicle and process for the advancement of Indigenous peoples' rights, it is crucial that member states and Indigenous peoples and other stakeholders actively engage themselves in this work. It is also vital that MRIP is perceived as meaningful and useful for indigenous peoples. I therefore invite member states, indigenous peoples, UN colleagues to continue to make submissions to our work and use the studies that are produced for you and for indigenous peoples. Mr. Chairman, at the first two sessions of the expert mechanism, a significant number of member states, indigenous peoples, and other organizations and institutions participated, including the special rapporteur himself, the permanent forum representative, as well as representative of the Committee on Elimination of Racial Discrimination and another human rights institution. The expert mechanism has completed the study on the lessons learned and challenges to achieve the right of indigenous peoples to education, including the expert mechanism advice number one, which provides key normative content and recommendations. The Human Rights Council, in Resolution 12/13, strongly encourages states to disseminate the report broadly and to take into account when elaborating national plans and strategies. The current two-year study that MRIP is undertaking is entitled Indigenous Peoples and the Right to Participate in Decision-Making. This report will be out very soon, and we encourage, again, indigenous peoples, member states, and other relevant UN bodies to continue to contribute to this study, which will be finalized in our next year. The UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is used as a framework by the expert mechanisms in its work and as a specific item on its agenda. We discuss the use of the Declaration to protect and promote the rights of indigenous peoples and identify issues to be proposed to the Council for future studies. The expert mechanism continues to encourage human rights mechanisms at the national and regional levels to be established or to have strong focus on the rights of indigenous peoples. Proposals were made for indigenous peoples' rights to be highlighted during the Human Rights Council sessions through regular panel events, through the promotion of the declaration within the work of the Council itself, in particular in relation to the Universal Periodic Review, and a follow-up to the Durban Review Conference. I am pleased to say that our proposal to group all reports on indigenous peoples' rights at the same session of the Council, usually in September, including the report of the Special Rapporteur, is adopted and has been put into practice. Funding to indigenous peoples to attend MRIP sessions through the UN Voluntary Fund has been approved, and the Council has now requested the Office of the High Commissioner on Human Rights to prepare a document evaluating the practical implications of the extension of the fund's mandate to support participation in the sessions of the Human Rights Council and treaty bodies. This has been a proposal that was made by the expert mechanism as well. Members of the expert mechanism, Mr. Chairman, have had opportunities to participate in meetings in different regions of the world and in various occasions, jointly with the Permanent Forum and as well as the Special Rapporteur. It participated in the ed session of the Permanent Forum as well as the expert group meeting earlier this year on development with culture and identity, where we have also provided our inputs, and three coordination meetings of the three mandates dealing with indigenous peoples. I am also pleased to say that representatives of the Permanent Forum has also attended MRIP's annual session and to the technical workshop on the right of indigenous peoples to participate in decision making. The expert mechanism is also very encouraged by the positive response by the states and indigenous peoples alike to the work of MRIP and will continue to undertake wide consultations and coordinate with other UN mandates in the preparation of thematic studies. In conclusion, Mr. Chairperson, I would like to thank the Permanent Forum for its effort to promote the work of the expert mechanism and would appreciate continued collaboration in disseminating information about our existence and our mandate. Contributions in the form of written submissions, participation to the annual session of the expert mechanism, as well as follow-up of the studies and the expert mechanism advices, in my view, would not only enhance our cooperation, but also promote the common goal of protecting indigenous peoples' rights. MRIP warmly welcomes further efforts to work together on similar issues at the regional level, particularly in helping indigenous peoples' effective engagement with states. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Lasimbang. The Permanent Forum thanks you for the support between the two mechanisms. And the meeting that we're holding today among the three mechanisms on the rights of indigenous peoples is of importance in this regard. We'd also like to tell you that at the regional level, in March, we did important work for a Latin American meeting of indigenous peoples and states regarding work for indigenous children. And together with the International Labor Organization, we're planning to do similar work in September, where we'll be taking up the issue of the implementation of Convention 169. Because in Latin America, almost all countries have adopted it. In many cases, Convention 169 of the ILO is part of national legislation, but we still have some difficulties of implementation, especially as regards what the special rapporteur mentioned. Problems with extractive industries or with mega projects. It's very important that we make progress in consultations and the question of prior informed consent, as the declaration affirms. So thank you so much, Ms. Lasimbang, for your statement. The Permanent Forum and the observers will now hold a dialogue with the Special Rapporteur and with Ms. Lasimbang. And toward that end, I would like to say that the time limit for statements will be 4 minutes for the caucuses and 2 minutes for the individual organizations. We'll be monitoring the time with a machine here on the podium. So we trust that you will respect that time management. And that will make it possible for everyone here to participate. So we'll begin with our list of speakers. We have Mr. Hans Peter Buvolin of Denmark as the first speaker on the list. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The government of Denmark is pleased to use this opportunity to comment on its cooperation with Bolivia related to the special theme of the 9th session of the Permanent Forum. As a country which has played an active role in the creation of the Permanent Forum, we are pleased to see governments voluntarily making use of the forum's mechanisms to recommend concrete actions and to offer policy advice. The improvement of living conditions of the Guarani population in the Chaco region of Bolivia has been part of a major effort by Denmark to follow up on the recommendations of the forum and actively support to the implementation of the ILO Convention 169 and the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, both adopted by the plurinational state of Bolivia as part of its national legislation. To our knowledge, the Danish program Bolivia is the largest bilateral cooperation program ever designed to support the rights of indigenous peoples and based upon the priorities and the active participation of national indigenous organizations in the process of its formulation. The main components of the program have been the incorporation of indigenous concerns in public policies and enhancing the indigenous participation in public office, the regulation and entitling of indigenous lands and indigenous land management. During the period of 2005 to 2010, Denmark has invested some $30 million in this effort in Bolivia. Mr. Chairman, it should be not be necessary to inform you that the permanent forum as a, and the permanent forum as a whole, that Bolivia has made considerable progress over the past years concerning public policies and political participation in favor of indigenous peoples. And we are proud to have been partners in this achievement. Over the past years, Denmark has supported the titling of more than 10 million hectares or some 100,000 square kilometers of indigenous lands in Bolivia. Some of these land titles benefit the Guarani population, and we consider the granting of land as a necessary measure to make an end to feudal conditions in the Chaco region. We are confident that the plurinational government of Bolivia shares this view. Denmark has supported political measures to create an interministerial commission to make an end to forced labor and servitude, as well as support the elaboration of a new law against discrimination, initiatives inspired to a large extent by the situation of the Guarani in El Chaco. Finally, we wish to express that the experience of indigenous land management has become important expressions of indigenous autonomy, which is presently part of the Bolivian political administrative structure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias a usted, señor.
Thank you, sir. Still following our list of speakers, we give the floor to Mr. Jeff Harmer, Secretary of the Department of Families, Housing, Community Services, and Indigenous Affairs of Australia. Mr. Harmer, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank the presentation of the Special Rapporteur, Mr. Anaya, as well. The Australian Government was pleased to announce its support for the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples on the 3rd of April 2009 and welcomes this opportunity to update the Permanent Forum on key developments in Indigenous policy in Australia over the year. Along with the national apology to the stolen generations, the announcement of support for the Declaration marked a resetting of the relationship between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. This new relationship is based on good faith, goodwill and mutual respect. All governments in Australia, through the Council of Australian Governments, are working hard to close the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians through six ambitious targets around life expectancy, child mortality, education and employment. The Prime Minister reports to Parliament at the beginning of each year on the progress against these targets. The Australian Government is also committed to increasing Indigenous Australians' participation in the institutions of democratic government. A national Indigenous representative body is seen as a prerequisite to enabling new partnerships and resetting the relationship with government. On the 22nd of November 2009, the Australian Government announced its support and funding for the establishment of a national Indigenous representative body, the National Congress of Australia's First People. The model for the new body was proposed by an independent steering committee chaired by the then Aboriginal and Torres Strait Social Justice Commissioner, Mr. Tom Calmer, and was based on 12 months of extensive consultation across Australia with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. The guiding principle in developing the model was Article 18 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The new body will be a non-government entity with structural arrangements that provide flexibility, independence and ease of implementation, and which have the potential to facilitate engagement of Indigenous people in their local organisations and representative structures. In Australia, Indigenous experts form part of a regular and ad hoc mechanism to provide advice in specific areas, but now there is a specific mechanism for drawing together a national Indigenous perspective for engagement with government and other bodies. The National Congress will provide the Australian Government with a means to effectively engage with Indigenous people to secure the evidence and guidance required to inform strong policy on Indigenous issues. The Australian Government was very pleased to welcome Mr. James Anaya to Australia last year. We shared much common ground, particularly on the legitimate entitlement of Indigenous people to all human rights based on principles of equality, partnership, good faith and mutual respect. The Government is acting on issues raised by the United Nations Special Rapporteur in relation to the Racial Discrimination Act. the Australian government has introduced legislation to reinstate the Racial Discrimination Act and to make necessary changes to the Northern Territory Emergency Response legislative measures following extensive consultations and community engagement with Indigenous people. The government announced its decision to reinstate the operation of the Racial Discrimination Act and redesign a number of Northern Territory Emergency Response measures in November 2009. The proposed amendments were passed by the House of Representatives on the 24th of February and are likely to be debated in the Senate during May or June this year. The legislation provides for the current suspension of the Racial Discrimination Act in relation to the Northern Territory Emergency Response to be lifted from 31 December 2010, allowing time for the passage of legislation through both houses of Australian Parliament and the necessary time for the redesign measures to be put in place and for effective transition from existing to new arrangements. It is proposed that all new and redesigned Northern Territory Emergency Response measures be implemented from July 2010, will conform to the Racial Discrimination Act. The government remains strongly committed to the work started under the Northern Territory Emergency Response, which has delivered a wide range of improvements, including school nutrition programs, creches, child health checks, ear and eye surgery, extra policing, safe homes, new food stores, and more affordable, healthy food in over 70 remote communities. The government looks forward to continuing a constructive dialogue with the Special Rapporteur. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll now hear statements from caucuses to keep this dialogue active. And we have on our list Mr. Arthur Manuel, who will be speaking on behalf of the Caucus of North America. You have the floor, sir.
Levantar la mano, señor Manuel.
Could you raise your hand, Mr. Manuel? Are you in the hall? You have the floor, sir.
Señor Manuel.
Mr. Manuel? You'll need to use the microphone so that you can be interpreted.
Good morning. First of all, I'd like to thank the Permanent Forum for allowing us to make our comments and recommendations this morning. I would like to begin by drawing the Permanent Forum's attention to the fact that the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus did prepare a report which we submitted to the Permanent Forum. I will only highlight and share some of these comments in this presentation, but this presentation has to be read in context of our full report of the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus that we prepared from our meeting in March in 2010. I think it's important to realize that the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus was very concerned about the definition and concept related to development. I think one thing is that Indigenous people at the community level normally see development in terms of activities that destroy the land. In fact, a lot of the organizations that operate at the community level talk about protecting protecting their land. And it's important to realize that human rights violations that Indigenous people at the community level experience are normally related to government activities that government are forcing onto the land, and they use the legal processes, either through trespass or breach of injunctions, or they use mischief and these other legal activities to force indigenous people into the court system, to force them into sometimes even being incarcerated for their activities. And these are basic, fundamental human rights violations. And it's not violations in the normal context that the non-native sort of looks at human rights violations, because it's a new development that is, I think, the responsibility of the permanent form and of the special rapporteur to actually define what those are vis-a-vis what are considered the mainstream concepts of development or the mainstream concepts of human rights. And I think those are things that we were very concerned about when we were talking as the North American Indigenous People Caucus, because we know we as Indigenous people have free, prior, informed consent, you know. We know we also have, according to 32, the right to develop and plan in regard to our traditional territories. We also know we have the right to demand from the government, the state government, that they include us in decision-making activities. And I think it's important that we understand that what we're carving out here in these discussions right now is how do these things really fit on the ground. And that is not the case right now. We feel that a lot of ideas in terms of development are sort of looked at in terms of joint ventures with existing companies and stuff like that. But that is not the direction of the people that come to the permanent forum are fighting for. Our human rights are deeply ingrained in our land, and that is something that I need to hear from the permanent forum and from the special rapporteur in terms of the discussion that that they're giving. Okay. I didn't even hear what he said.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. As I had said, we do have this machine to monitor the time. So I would ask speakers to please manage their time strictly within the limits. And we give the floor to the next speaker, Mr. Samak Launchin from the Caucus of Asia. Mr. Launchin, you have the floor.
La palabra. Mr. Chairman, members of the forum, ladies and gentlemen, since the Office of the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples was established, we have had country visits and unofficial visits of the then Special Rapporteur, Professor Steven Hagen, to a number of countries in Asia and other regions, including to the Philippines and to Cambodia. In 2009, the incumbent Special Rapporteur, Professor James Anaya, made a country visit to Nepal and made unofficial visits to India and Indonesia. We are encouraged by the Special Rapporteur's unofficial visit to Thailand very recently in January 2010, in which he had brought consultation with indigenous representatives from Thailand, Thailand representatives to ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights, and Thailand's National Human Rights Commission representative, and members from the Asia Indigenous Peoples Pact. We are encouraged with the growing cooperation between the Special Rapporteur with the Permanent Forum and the Expert Mechanism processes. We recall and support Proposal 4.1 of the first session of the Expert Mechanism that calls for the UN Voluntary Fund to facilitate the participation of indigenous peoples in the work of the Human Rights Council and that of the UN treaty bodies. Mr. Chairman, as the special theme of this session, Development with Culture and Identity, the most pressing need is for a review of laws to make them conform to the standards of the UN Declaration. In this regard, we Indigenous Peoples Asia Caucus welcome both reports of the Special Rapporteur to Human Rights Council dated 15 July 2009 and UN General Assembly dated 4 September 2009. We urge states, UN agencies, programs and funds and private companies to respect and implement the Special Rapporteur's conclusion and recommendations, particularly on duty to counsel as their obligation in good faith. We also request to the Permanent Forum to ask states, UN agencies, programs and funds and private companies to do so. We welcome that the Special Rapporteur is going to carry a study on legal pluralism and indigenous customary law and request the Special Rapporteur make broad consultations including indigenous peoples from Asia. While it's a major step that the Association of Southeast Asia Nations Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights was finally created in October 2009, it is mandated yet largely on promotion more than the protection of universally recognized fundamental rights and freedoms of ASEAN citizens, including the collective rights of indigenous peoples. Another major development is the statement of commitment made by the ASEAN Forum of Parliamentarians on Population and Development to promote and uphold the rights of indigenous peoples consistent with the UN DRIP during its meeting in March 2010. In this context, effective consultations and partnership with indigenous peoples are necessary to bring about positive changes in national legislation towards the recognition of indigenous peoples' rights. On the part of indigenous peoples, several initiatives have already been undertaken at all levels to promote the UN declaration and push for its implementation. On the part of the Asia Indigenous Peoples Pact, it has produced more than 17,500 info posters on the UN DRIP in 10 languages in Asia. It has also conducted a training of trainers on the UN Declaration and has published a training manual on the UN Declaration. It has also started working closely with some members of the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights and also with the National Human Rights Institutions to mainstream indigenous issues into their work. Further, AIPP, ASEAN Indigenous Peoples Pact, has strengthened its collaboration work and UN agencies, particularly with ILO, UNDP, RIPP, UNIFEM, UNFPA, IFAD, among others. In conclusion, we make the following recommendations: to immediately organize national and subnational workshops in cooperation with the Special Rapporteur on the UN DRIP that shall include consult state agencies, including legislative and judiciary, national human rights institutions, UN agencies, and representatives of indigenous peoples' organizations, institutions, and movements. Second, recommendations for the UN Permanent Forum, UN agencies and other donors to make funds available for organizing Asia regional workshop in cooperation with Special Rapporteur on legal pluralism and indigenous customary laws. Third, for the Permanent Forum, in cooperation with the Special Rapporteur, to work closely with relevant UN bodies and procedures under the Human Rights Council for the monitoring and reporting on the situation of indigenous peoples, including providing recommendations to states and other bodies relating to their implementation of the UN Declaration. Fourth, for the Permanent Forum, in cooperation with the Special Rapporteur, to work closely with the ASEAN... One recommendation more. And indigenous organizations towards integrating the rights and concerns of indigenous peoples in the work of the ASEAN Commission. In particular, the Permanent Forum can facilitate exchanges and workshops between and among the regional human rights mechanisms on how they are addressing the issues of indigenous peoples in relation to UN Declaration. Finally, for the Permanent Forum, in cooperation with the Special Rapporteur, to fully support the development of indicator tools in partnership with UN agencies and indigenous organizations, institutions at the national and local levels on the implementation of the UN DRIP. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Gracias.
Thank you. We give the floor to Mr. Bartolome Clavero. You have the floor, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to have a dialogue with the Special Rapporteur and the chairperson of the expert mechanism. First of all, I want to emphasize the coordination among the three mechanisms and the test to that coordination that we see through this session. Once we have this basis of cooperation among the mechanisms of the United Nations that specifically deal with indigenous people's issues, I wonder whether we wouldn't have to extend that cooperation to other bodies. Of course, with the will of those organizations, and I wonder if we could agree on terms for that kind of cooperation. Members of the Committee on Human Rights, Committee on Economic and Social and Cultural Rights, the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination could also be present at our sessions on a continuing basis and not just with isolated visits. I think that would be important because these bodies are also UN mechanisms that deal with indigenous rights, or that should, particularly the Committees on International Covenants, whose Article 1 reflects the right to self-determination of all peoples. And since the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples has been enacted, we know that human rights include the rights of indigenous peoples. So we feel that in the reports of those organizations, there should be mention of the rights of indigenous peoples and the right of self-determination of those peoples, and also their obligation under the declaration to make their reports to these committees in relation to everything in connection with indigenous issues and in consultation with those peoples. The attention given by those committees to the rights of indigenous peoples is very uneven, very irregular. So we feel that the kind of coordination that exists among our three organizations should be extended to these other bodies. We have created an interactivity among our three mechanisms that I'm sure will continue in the future and that can be expanded. Without taking up too much time, I want to mention one specific case that reflects the concerns of the forum at this session and that has been very much on our minds in the activities of the Special Rapporteur this year, and that's the case of Colombia. The report of the Special Rapporteur, among other points, contained a recommendation that went so far as to recommend that the Special Rapporteur of the Secretary General for the Prevention of Genocide be watchful of the evolution of the situation in Colombia. The Agua case is the one of most concern to the forum, where there are some very difficult conditions and where there's not too much confidence about the protection being given by the Peruvian government, because the Agua people have requested withdrawal of the Colombian army. On another point regarding Colombia, the report submitted by the Colombian government at this session of the forum indicates an understanding of obligations regarding the rights of indigenous peoples, and in particular Convention 169, with a view to seeking a balance between the general interests of the Colombian nation and the specific interests of the indigenous peoples in Colombia. Fortunately, the rapporteur's statement today made it clear that that's not the obligation of the state. It's not to find a balance, but rather to take up defense of and respect for the rights of the indigenous peoples in accordance with the Declaration and in accordance with Agreement 169. And I think it's very important for that to be stated in our sessions. Thank you.
Gracias, Professor Clavero.
Thank you, Professor Clavero. We'll continue with our list of speakers. We have Mildred Gandia Reyes of the Caribbean Caucus on the list. Ms. Gandia, you have the floor.
Consistent with the items 85 and 86 of the Plan of Action of the Second International Decade of World Indigenous Peoples, we recommend that the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues facilitate a special regional consultative session to focus on the unique situation of the Caribbean Indigenous Peoples. Organization and planning of this session should take place in collaboration with regionally recognized Caribbean Indigenous organizations and include representation of the Indigenous peoples of the island of Borinquen, Puerto Rico, without discrimination. Two, we call upon the interagency group to support, fund, and participate in a special Caribbean regional consultative session. Three, to invite the special rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of Indigenous people to the special Caribbean regional consultative session to review the particular situations of Caribbean Indigenous peoples, including their claims that national laws and policies are discriminatory and inconsistent with international human rights laws and standards. Mr. Chairman, we further recommend that the Permanent Forum 4 pay special attention to ensuring access, including equal funding opportunities, to Indigenous representatives of Borinquen, Puerto Rico, with the view to facilitate participation not only to a special Caribbean regional consultative session, but at all relevant meetings throughout the United Nations system. As a result of Borinquen, Puerto Rico's colonial status, it is not a member of the United Nations, and Indigenous representatives from the island are continuously discriminated against or denied funding opportunities to participate in meetings, conferences, regional specific consultations, and capacity building sessions. In closing, Mr. Chairman, a failure by the Permanent Forum to address the effects of institutionalized colonialism serves only to perpetuate colonialism and affect our ability to participate effectively with these important sessions. Omabahari, with respect, haho, thank you for your consideration.
Gracias a usted por el uso del tiempo.
Thank you for your respect of the time limit. And we're going to continue with our list of speakers and give the floor to Minister Stedman Fagoth, who is Minister of the Nicaraguan Institute of Fishing and Aquaculture. Mr. Fagoth, you have the floor.
El compañero que habló en nombre del caucus de Norte.
The person who spoke on behalf of the Caucus of North America talked about persecution and imprisonment. In 2010, we're talking about imprisonment. And the colleague from the Asian Caucus talked about the word legislation. I'd like to suggest to all our brothers and sisters in the forum that apart from the work being done in individual nations, maybe one way out would be for all nations to enact their own legislation in accordance with their traditions, their customs, way of life, creating their own institutions, their legal institutions with their own territory, their own population, their own natural resources. Dr. Jing Sanaya You said self-determination. Well, yes, that would be self-determination. Here, on behalf of governments and states, we're hearing people that are washing their hands of things a bit. We're not making progress. We continue to complain, but without progress. The other option would be that we keep quiet. But the fact is that all of these countries where all of these indigenous nations are should allow the indigenous peoples to be free. Why subjugate them with legislation to which they did not even contribute? They should have their own constitutions, their own government, in accordance with their own rules of the game, not in accordance with the rules of the game of others, because that's a question of one society absorbing another society. That mustn't be allowed. We, the indigenous peoples of Nicaragua, and Dr. Anaya is aware of what I'm going to say, he saw some of our political process. He was with us in political commissions while we were at war. I'm not saying I'm involving him in our military action. No, in political commissions. And our indigenous communities, well, we lost over 1,600 men who were killed in combat. A very small nation, the Miskito Indians, suffered such losses. I don't recommend that to anyone. War is a terrible thing. A great deal of blood was shed for us to get where we are today. I don't recommend that to anyone. But we can't just keep our arms crossed either. So I feel that the United Nations itself should support the legislation of each of these indigenous nations that are now being subjugated to a new form of colonialism, a neocolonialism. They must be liberated. Why should the Miskito of Honduras be a Miskito of Honduras? Why? They have their own rights. The Miskito of Honduras were there before Honduras ever became a country. They had their own territory, their own natural resources. So I think we need to take a turn in the action of the United Nations so that the United Nations can support us and our peoples to obtain self-determination through the constitutions of the peoples themselves. Thank you.
Gracias, señor ministro.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. We give the floor now to our colleague, Hassan. You have the floor.
استمعت معز الفلون بداية وأنا أخذ الكلمة.
Firstly, ladies and gentlemen, this is the first time I am taking the floor during this meeting. I unfortunately arrived here late because of the volcanic ash cloud over Western Europe. I would like to extend my warmest thanks to each and every one of you, particularly to the special rapporteur and also to the representative of the experts mechanism. I would also like to congratulate the chairperson on his election to this important position and to extend my congratulations to the members of the Bureau. I thank the outgoing president, chairperson, for his excellent work carried out during his chairmanship. Mr. Chairman, it goes without saying that this opportunity for dialogue with the rapporteur and with the expert mechanism representative is an opportunity that we need to seize with a view to creating dialogue between the various mechanisms that have to do with the rights of indigenous peoples within the United Nations and with the peoples themselves, the stakeholders, governments. It's really an historic opportunity to establish dialogue on progress with respect to human rights of indigenous peoples, and also thought processes with respect to the future and ways of contributing to the respect for the human rights of indigenous peoples. When it comes to violations of the cultural rights and cultural identity of indigenous peoples caused by the economic development models that fail to respect those rights and that treat peoples in accordance with national constitutions that exclude indigenous peoples, constitutions that seek for the creation of nation states with a single language. All of this has led to major and historical violations of the rights of indigenous peoples, and those violations are continuing and will probably continue for many, many years to come. The definition of culture outlined by Mexico really takes on board every aspect of the daily life of indigenous peoples. Respect for the rights of indigenous peoples needs to be all-encompassing. The rights, specifically defined rights of indigenous peoples, include the right to participate in cultural life in a comprehensive manner. The right also to participate in political decision-making in all its aspects. The same goes for participation in economic life. All of this requires active participation by indigenous peoples in decision-making processes. We need to restructure, reorganize national constitutions. We need to restructure these constitutions which do not respect the rights of indigenous peoples. Indigenous peoples are suffering from linguistic and cultural violations of their linguistics and cultural rights, which governments and so forth have in the past considered that cultural diversity is a threat to national unity. In view of the experience of Africa, we can say that the greatest violations have stemmed from famine and from war and from poverty and have been caused by these phenomena and by the crying lack of justice. These factors have contributed greatly to suffering in Africa and to suffering among African indigenous peoples. And therefore, the African Committee on the Human Rights of Indigenous Peoples has issued recommendations, and these recommendations are frequently not respected by governments. When it comes to progress that has been achieved, I would like to highlight education, the field of education, the media in Morocco and in Algeria, indigenous languages are now taught in schools. two television channels have been set up in Algeria and in Morocco, indigenous language TV channels. However, there are major violations of human rights of indigenous peoples in these two countries. These two countries have not been sufficiently forward-looking in terms of reform. I wish to put a question to the rapporteur concerning the situation of the Amazigh political party in Morocco. The special rapporteur was in contact with the government. The government informed the rapporteur that the allegations that had been leveled could not be proven. There had been an attempted assassination of the head of the political party. Subsequently, the political party was disbanded on the grounds that its ideology was racist in nature. The matter is currently before the courts, but the courts have refused to accept the definition contained in the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racist Discrimination. And we are wondering whether or not the definition contained in that convention is binding on all countries that have ratified the convention in question. We would like to seek your opinion on that issue. And then if prior informed consent, the rights in terms of prior informed consent, do those requirements call for constitutions to be reformed so as to ensure that they are inclusive in nature and not exclusive when it comes to the rights of indigenous peoples? Thank you.
Foro permanente es el único espacio de diálogo entre
The permanent forum is the only space for dialogue between indigenous peoples, states, mechanisms of the United Nations. The place for a frank, open dialogue on all the problems affecting us. So I therefore ask all participants very cordially and all observers very cordially to respect the limited time that we have available. That applies to all our speakers. I give the floor now to Ms. Maria Teresa Mesquita, who represents the National Foundation of Brazil of Indigenous Issues, FUNAI. Ms. Mesquita, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and let me thank also the Special Rapporteur for his very judicious reflections on the right to development and the need for development with culture and identity. I also recognize Ms. Yeni Lasimbang, the representative of the expert mechanism, for her words. Mr. Rapporteur, we appreciate this opportunity to give continuity to our dialogue in Brazil and would like to take this opportunity to submit information on recent measures adopted to strengthen the country's indigenous policies. The federal government has implemented significant improvements to the FUNAI, to the National Foundations for Indigenous Issues, the body with primary responsibility for coordination and execution of indigenous policies in Brazil. FUNAI has undergone extensive restructuring. Especially the institution's former centralized model has been replaced with an organizational structure guided by a participatory management system to date, a total of 36 regional coordinating units and 297 local technical coordinating units have been established. In addition, committees composed of representatives of FUNAI and indigenous communities will be created. The committees will be tasked with eliciting the priorities of individual communities, preparing plans to this end, and following up the execution of those priorities with indigenous populations. With a view to qualifying FUNAI personnel, specific indigenous career tracks have been established, including the positions of indigenous agent and indigenous expert. Consequently, all entering FUNAI staff personnel will be required to have specific knowledge of indigenous questions. Through this restructuring process, six new ethno-environmental protection fronts have been established to work with isolated and recently contacted groups. The new ethno-environmental fronts, which bring the agencies total to 12, represent a significant expansion of FUNAI. They also serve to enhance protection of isolated and recently contacted groups while bolstering the official policy of preventing forced contacts. I would like to take this opportunity also to invite the participants of this forum to a side event on Brazil's 100 years of indigenous policy. The event will take place tomorrow, April 23rd, in Room 5, from 1:15 to 2:30. Our objective will be to demonstrate the expertise amassed from 1910, year in which the Indian Protection Service was founded in Brazil. Extending over the various stages of Brazilian indigenous policy and throughout history to the present day, when the construction of a new relationship between indigenous peoples and the Brazilian government and society founded and on dialogue and cooperation has taken shape. Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. I give the floor now to the next speaker on our list. Ms. Viviana Manrique, Deputy Minister of the Interior of Colombia. You have the floor, Ms. Manrique. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In 2009, Colombia had a visit from Rapporteur Anaya, and today we would like to comment on the visit we had for Mr. Anaya and progress made. In the framework of dialogue and agreement, we've maintained political dialogue. The main structures of indigenous organizations have been in dialogue with us, and we've created a round table to directly study the problems of specific indigenous peoples, the Awa people. We're going to be signing a protection plan with them this week. We have promoted over 18 projects that are already functioning in Colombia, and we've planned for six cases of justice that will be functioning by July with total implementation of indigenous justice. All entities at the centralized level are to apply prior consultation in accordance with ILO 169, and for the first time there's a clear single methodology for the implementation of prior consultation. Last year, we had 107 processes of inquiry. We have been improving education, health services, food security, all of this in an institutional framework together with the indigenous peoples. We have an integral plan in support of highly vulnerable indigenous peoples that are at risk of disappearance. We have promoted productive projects, including environmental tourism, in consultation with indigenous communities. Another example of this, is that we've made progress in the Constitutional Court. We've agreed on a clear methodology with all indigenous organizations, and we hope to complete consultations in the National Program for Indigenous Peoples and the design of the 34 safeguard plans requested by the court. And this will be expanded through a political document to the remaining 48 peoples throughout the country. A draft law of prior consultation has been written, and together with the High Commissioner for Human Rights, this will be completed and discussed. We've also begun the Plan 2010-2011, which will involve all organizations, women's organizations, in concerted policy in protection of indigenous women. At the end of this government's term of office, we will be leaving a policy document that will contain the methodology regarding prior consultation and the implementation of the safeguards plan and the plan of guarantees. We reiterate Colombia's invitation that the forum make a visit to Colombia and verify firsthand the situation of indigenous peoples in Colombia, especially the Awá people. Thank you. Thank you very much for that invitation. The permanent forum will be visiting Colombia, and we're sure that this work, in coordination with the special rapporteur and other rapporteurs, will yield important results, because we are extremely concerned at the situation of the Awá people and all the indigenous peoples in Colombia in general, who are living in a situation in which human rights are violated because of the situation of conflict as well that exists in Colombia. Thank you very much, madam. We're going to continue with our list of speakers from the caucuses. Now we'll have the Pacific Caucus, so we give the floor to Ms. Janine Gertz. Ms. Gertz, please.
Tiene la palabra.
Mm-hmm. You have the floor.
Tiene la palabra.
Mr. Chairperson, the Pacific Caucus thanks the Special Rapporteur for his presentation to the session on the Permanent Forum and expresses its appreciation that the Special Rapporteur is making himself available to meet with delegations of Indigenous peoples during his time at the session. We appreciate very much the extensive work and reporting that has been carried out since the last session of the Permanent Forum, and congratulate the Special Rapporteur on his contributions and achievements regarding the rights of Indigenous peoples. We are pleased that the Special Rapporteur has visited Australia during this past year and has recently released his report, including an annex addressing the Northern Territory intervention. We call upon the Government of Australia to closely examine this report and to give constructive and explicit responses to the findings and recommendations. The Pacific Caucus is aware that discussions have been conducted here in New York between representatives of the Australian Government and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples to look at procedure which might be used to examine and respond to the report, and we encourage the Australian Government to rely upon cooperative and participative methods to address any challenges in this report. Mr. Chairperson, the Pacific Caucus is also pleased to hear that a visit to another country in the Pacific region may occur in the coming year. We call upon states in the Pacific region to cooperate with and assist the work of the Special Rapporteur, and in particular to ensure that an open invitation is issued to the Special Rapporteur for a country visit, investigation or dialogue. We now ask the Special Rapporteur to take note of the following concerns and recommendations regarding the rights of Indigenous people in our region. In Australia, the Racial Discrimination Act continues to be suspended by the government, and in that situation, a number of human rights abuses continue to occur. The government has not acted to show it is treating the suspension of the Racial Discrimination Act as urgent and its serious abuse of rights. The Pacific Caucus continues to be concerned with military activities in Indigenous peoples' lands in Hawaii. the US military continues to use live ammunition, including depleted uranium, and these pollutants and dangerous materials are poisoning the Hawaiian lands and peoples. The environment of the indigenous peoples of the Pacific have been polluted from nuclear tests by the United States of America in the Marshall Islands, Johnson Island, and Christmas Island. The United Kingdom in Montebello, Maralinga, Emu Field in Australia, Christmas Island, Maldon Island, and France in Mururoa and Fangataufa in French Polynesia. The Special Rapporteur might consider whether a report and recommendations may be made in relation to remedy and dispute resolution are promoted and implemented. The Pacific Caucus encourages the Special Rapporteur to consider a study under the theme of climate change and Indigenous peoples in the Pacific. As is known, the Pacific region is populated by Indigenous peoples who live in vulnerable land and marine environments and who do not have the resources and capacity to mitigate the drastic changes that are occurring. Noting that 2010 is the International Year of Biodiversity, we ask the Special Rapporteur to consider a study on Indigenous peoples' human rights associated with the environment. These rights extend to, inter alia, Indigenous knowledges, cultural development and heritage protection, intellectual property, economic development and Indigenous well-being. In particular, we ask the Special Rapporteur to give attention to COP10 meeting under the Convention of Biological Diversity, where achievements against important targets from the Earth Summit in 1992 are to be addressed. In conclusion, Mr. Chairperson, the Pacific Caucus encourages the Special Rapporteur to continue to include consideration of the Pacific region in thematic reports that might be prepared annually. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
A usted las gracias, señora.
Thank you, madam. And we now turn to Ms. Du of the Youth Caucus, the Global Youth Caucus. You have the floor.
E-I-O. Special Rapporteur James Anaya and Chairperson Java Java Mambulat. We, the Youth Caucus, commend the declaration as a universal minimum standard of Indigenous rights peoples. However, as aspirational document, the rights under the UN DRIP are in fact empty rights unless we are incorporated into domestic law. Mr. Anaya, we used to focus on three areas today: education, criminal justice, and the implementation of the declaration. Education is our great concern of youth. In order to shoulder the responsibility of carrying on our cultural heritage and advocacy for equality and justice, the young generation of Indigenous peoples should be equipped and fully understanding our culture and our rights. Language is the life force of our peoples. It sustains us and educates us about our customs, traditions, and histories. The chance to not only learn our native tongue, but to be taught in our native language is essential to fully acknowledge and appreciate our ancestors' worldview. However, due to the modern developing patterns, Indigenous children have migrated to the cities for opportunities. When Indigenous children transfer to urban schools, they not only lose the chance to obtain the traditional knowledge that has been passed down from our ancestors, but also fail to learn their mother tongue in a natural environment. We believe mainstream school curricula must balance both mainstream and traditional education, no matter where our youth are attending schools, and that human resources, material resources, and funding are provided to ensure an Indigenous approach to education. Criminal justice. Indigenous people make up a large proportion of state prison population, and this is the case in New Zealand and Australia. In New Zealand, Māoris are 50% of the prison population and only 15% of the total population. This pattern is similar across all Indigenous people, and in particular for our youth. at each stage of our criminal system, from apprehension to conviction to parole, there exists a bias towards indigenous people in a punitive system. We know that the incarceration of our youth leads to isolation from their community, the breakdown of family units, and reoffended. Implementation of restorative justice through foreign, such as indigenous courts, must be a priority issue. If not, we fear that the criminal justice system, through its punitive approach, will continue as a colonizing and disenfranchising tour for young indigenous people. The youth caucus commands countries such as Bolivia. We have incorporated aspect of the UN drip into their constitution. However, aside from international pressure and justical creativity, it is hard for our peoples hold their state accountable. We know that implementation is essential to give effect and sustenance to the rights within the declaration. Incorporation, as opposed to endorsement, ensure that state governments are held responsible for breaching our rights. Implementation is a pressing issue for our people, and we, the Youth Caucus, implore the Special Rapporteur to move towards implementing our foundation rights. Without greater incorporation, the future of our people will remain subject to the states and their interests. We respectfully submit the following recommendations. First, we urge the Special Rapporteur to focus on language revitalization. Youth need the chance to learn their culture. Indigenous language must be offered in the urban schools where there are indigenous pupils or students. Indigenous culture and history must be integrated into the curricula in an indigenous-based way. Second, Special Rapporteur investigates bias and racism towards indigenous youth in a criminal justice system, and in particular, we recommend Special Rapporteur encourage the development of indigenous courts premised on customs and restorative justice. Third, we submit that the permanent forum, with the help of Special Rapporteur, to set up a half-day section on the topic of unrecognized indigenous people, because without the recognition, many indigenous people continue to suffer from the crime against humanities and human rights violations. Lastly, the Indigenous Youth Caucus call on Canada and the United States of America to endorse, support, and implement the UN DRIP expeditiously and with participation of the youth from the region. Thank you.
Gracias, señora Du.
Thank you, Ms. Du. I give the floor now to the next speaker, who is the representative of the African Caucus, Mr. Alamed Al-Gherar. You have the floor, sir.
Está en sala.
Are you in the hall? If you could raise your hand, you have the floor.
Honorable Chair, members of the UN Permanent Forum, distinguished representative of Indigenous peoples, sisters and brothers here today. First, we would like to extend our congratulations to you, Mr. Chairperson. First, water and climate change is an issue that affects Indigenous people all over the world. This issue should more accurately be called climate genocide, because so many issues in the African context stem from this loss of land, livelihood, forced displacement, conflict between communities, and loss of cultural identity. These are issues for all African, but Indigenous people are the most affected. A few examples of this would be bitter conflicts among the northern Kenyan Indigenous community, such as the Turkana, Sumbaru, and Burana, and similar situations in Sudan and Karamojong in East Uganda, as well as in Western Somalia. Another serious issue of concern is the marginalization, exploitation of indigenous women in the world and across Africa. Indigenous African women are frequently victimized, assaulted, and raped, and in need of an international legal protection. Such cases were documented widely in Congo and other Central African nations, as well as in the case of the British military base in Kenya and the Laikipia region located north of Nairobi near Mountain Kenya, that many indigenous Sumbaro and Maasai women have been sexually violated by various parties and must be protected by international law. We are concerned that human trafficking is a major problem across the continent of Africa and is done through different means, and recently became more obvious in more African cities. Kenya has been recognized as a country of origin, destinations, and transit, as well as place for domestic trafficking. Women, men, girls, boys have been identified to be trafficked in Kenya, although most identified to date involve children, especially in the case of domestic trafficking. Again, indigenous people are in the most vulnerable of such practice. Also, health-related issues of great concern, such as AIDS and TB, they're a major problem across the continent of Africa. Recommendation: a special rapporteur should be appointed specifically for the African context. Two, for the time being, we recommend a special rapporteur start visit the area of such conflicts and wars that involve indigenous people in different areas, such as the area of the Amazigh in Niger and Mali. Three, we recommend that International Indigenous Legal Center or an indigenous entity or representative to be established solely to represent the indigenous people and to serve as permanent link with other UN body agency and treaty bodies such as CEDAW, UNICEF, and the CRC, the Committee on the Rights of a Child, that will ensure the protection of indigenous women and children and will bring their views and concern to these bodies, since most of the government comes in review by such UN agencies and other UN treaties bodies, and most importantly, to furnish the experts of such bodies with the right, correct, and legal information, and is to ensure the safety and the right of indigenous child, as well as to eliminate discrimination against the indigenous women. Four, we recommend that indigenous people must be involved in any UN work and in initiatives on water issues and climate change or genocide in the Africa. Thank you, Chairperson.
Gracias a usted.
Thank you. We turn now to the next speaker, who is Ms. Violeta Ford of the Arctic Organization. You have the floor, madam.
¿Está en la sala la señora Ford?
Is Ms. Ford in the hall?
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Ms. Chair, give me 1 minute. My name is Violet Ford, and I am an executive council member of the Inuit Circumpolar Council. The implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples has been utmost in the minds and on the agenda in this room since its adoption. This declaration has been a long-fought struggle with many years of work. Further, we appreciate the fact that the United States and Canada will take steps towards endorsing the declaration. We are pleased that each of these states has recognized the significance of this instrument for our peoples throughout the circumpolar regions and indigenous peoples worldwide. However, we must insist that no conditions or qualifications are placed on the minimum standards contained in the declaration, especially those that may be contrary to the spirit and intent of the overall instrument. Furthermore, we request that such endorsements are done in a speedy fashion due to the urgency of the conditions that face our communities. In addition, the pivotal point of any such exercise is its implementation of each and every article in order for us to genuinely exercise and enjoy our fundamental individual and collective human rights. Despite the adoption of this instrument, the ongoing violations of indigenous human rights continue. This is true even in the context of existing domestic instruments and agreements that recognize our right to self-determination, including regions such as Greenland and Nunavut in northern Canada and elsewhere. Unfortunately, state parties to these agreements are not fulfilling their solemn obligations that are oftentimes constitutionally protected. The Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples will be like an empty vessel instead of the full instrument that we wish for if we cannot be involved in the steps to successfully implement this instrument and its principles and articles at the domestic and regional levels. More must be done to implement the Declaration standards. Dialogue must be initiated, positive reform of national laws and policies. The Inuit Circumpolar Council recommends that the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, as well as the Special Rapporteur, carry out a gap analysis on a regional basis so as to determine the extent to which existing legislative administrative policies of governments already reflect the rights laid out in the Declaration, and furthermore, there is a need to formalize processes and procedures in collaboration with Indigenous peoples to guarantee our direct involvement at regional and domestic levels so as to successfully implement the Declaration. It is only in this fashion that states are able to uphold our right to participate in matters that impact on our status, on our rights, and on our lives, as well as our right to the free and prior informed consent. Such a gap analysis will provide insight as to the real indicators of political, economic, social, and cultural development embraced by the prerequisite of the right to self-determination. Thank you.
La siguiente oradora de la lista es la señora.
The next speaker is Ms. Latifa Duch. Ms. Duch, you have the floor.
Oui, merci.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Distinguished experts, members of the forum, distinguished delegates, colleagues, firstly, I wish to congratulate you on your election to the chairmanship of this session. We wish you every success in organizing our work. And we welcome also the work of Professor Anaya for the excellent work that he's carried out in the context of his role as Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Issues. We, like Anizir representatives, wish to have clarification on the situation of Indigenous peoples in Africa, Mr. Rapporteur. Violations of the rights of Indigenous people in Africa are manifold and continuing to today. The Declaration of the Human Rights of Indigenous Peoples is an excellent instrument for protecting human rights in Africa, and we wish to know whether, in the context of your work, have addressed the issue of African countries. The Kabylian peoples are victims of repressions. In the context of the demands for rights of self-determination, the issue of natural resource exploitation is also of major concern. There is also great insecurity in the Sahel region because of natural resource exploitation and geopolitical issues. Uranium extraction in Niger has affected the water table and contaminated the water table for the next 400,000 years. Local landowners are being expropriated and uranium miners are being brought in on the pretext that the land belongs to the state. Mr. Rapporteur, you have undoubtedly heard of the imprisonment of young Anaziri following peaceful demonstrations in the south of Morocco and in the Mid-Atlas region. These people were sentenced by the Moroccan courts to 1 to 4 months of imprisonment for alleged racist comments. The Moroccan government has taken measures to include the Amazigh language in the education system. However, we are concerned to note that these measures have only been partially implemented, and the Ministry of Education of Morocco has not taken the necessary measures to ensure that the language is taught in public and private schools. Actions taken by civil society organizations, studies carried out, show that students perform better if they are taught in their mother tongue than in another language. I would like to ask you, what kind of measures have been envisaged by the mechanism for ensuring respect of these basic human rights that are enshrined in the Universal Declaration on Human Rights and in the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples? Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Latifa. And we'll now ask our colleague Elisa Kalki to take the floor. You have the floor, Ms. Kalki.
Muchas gracias, señor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm grateful for the presence of the chair of the expert mechanism and also the special rapporteur in the region and at the global level. We have been discussing indigenous peoples' issues and cases of genocide of indigenous peoples. There are even cases on which we have no information. The Awa in Colombia, the Guarani in Brazil, Bagua in Peru, and other cases. But there are other types of genocide as well. I was told a moment ago, that a while ago, that there was climatic genocide. I would also say there's a genocide of development, a genocide on the part of hydroelectric plants, oil companies, mega projects, because displacement leads to the death of the culture of indigenous peoples. And that's the case of the indigenous people of Panama. There's a hydroelectric plant, and although the company and the government and the peoples have reached an agreement, thus far, none of the points of the agreement have in fact been implemented. I also want to refer to the cases of oil concessions that affect not only the resources of Maracari, but also other indigenous peoples of Peru. And there are such examples in Peru as well. And then there's something new that's happening, and that is persecution, criminalization of the indigenous movement and of indigenous leaders. In this century, where supposedly there's been progress in the rights of indigenous peoples, we have an indigenous leader who is in exile, and others are hiding in the forest because they're afraid of being taken prisoner. In Brazil, in September of last year, about 35 Guarani were burned in Mato Grosso. Did anyone say anything about this? No one. In the face of this region, of this situation, which is not just in existence in Latin America, I call upon mechanisms to give their attention to these cases so that action can be taken to prevent the use of these old
methods for the elimination of indigenous peoples that are being used even today by corporations. Thank you.
Senora Kanki. El próximo orador.
Thank you, Ms. Kaiki. The next speaker on my list is Mr. Gonzalo Oviedo of the International Union for the Preservation of Nature. Mr. Oviedo, you have the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
IUCN, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, and seven global conservation organizations, BirdLife International, Conservation International, Fauna and Flora International, The Nature Conservancy, Wetlands International, the Wildlife Conservation Society, and WWF. I would like to inform you about the recent creation of the Conservation Initiative on Human Rights by the indicated eight global conservation organizations. This is a strong reflection of the inclusive environmental goals we strive towards. As members of this initiative on human rights, we unite in our efforts to promote the integration of human rights in conservation policy and practice based on our common interest in promoting positive links between conservation and the rights of people to secure their livelihoods, enjoy healthy and productive environments, and live with dignity. As part of this initiative, we will work together to promote indigenous people's rights, identity, and culture within the context of conservation. We believe that by working collectively, we can better develop our work in this field, including through shared learning among conservation organizations, rights holders and stakeholders, and expert groups. We envision that the increased collaboration and joint priorities will allow for further application of rights-based approaches in our work with indigenous peoples and effectively integrate the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples into our agendas. As part of the Conservation Initiative on Human Rights, each of the participating organizations commits to uphold a set of human rights principles, enhance its capacities to ensure their implementation, and put in place appropriate accountability measures. The initiative is grounded in four common principles. First, respect internationally proclaimed human rights and make sure that we do not contribute to infringements of human rights while pursuing our mission. Second, support and promote the protection and realization of human rights within the scope of our conservation programs. Third, make a special effort to avoid harm to those who are vulnerable to infringements of their rights and to support the protection and fulfillment of their rights within the scope of our conservation programs. Fourth, support the improvement of governance systems that can secure the rights of indigenous peoples and local communities in the context of our work on conservation and sustainable natural resource use, including elements such as legal policy and institutional frameworks and procedures for equitable participation and accountability. The Conservation Initiative on Human Rights is still in its beginning stages, but we see it as an opportunity to further promote the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and Indigenous Peoples' cultures and identities in our conservation activities, particularly in relation to climate change and protected area programs. The initiative members look forward to continued dialogue and collaboration with indigenous peoples organizations, and especially with the Permanent Forum, the expert mechanism of the Human Rights Council, and other relevant bodies. These interactions will help strengthen the conservation and human rights agendas we require to confront the challenges that we face today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias, señor Oviedo.
Thank you, Mr. Oviedo. On the list of speakers, we have Ms. Michelle Batiu from the Office of the High Commissioner of the United Nations for Human Rights. You have the floor, madam.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm very pleased to be with you today. Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, representative of indigenous peoples, representatives of member states, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very pleased to make this intervention on behalf of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights is pleased once again to attend the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Peoples and to contribute to its important work. The rights of indigenous peoples have continued to be a priority for our office, and indigenous issues figure prominently in our new strategic management plan. As we pursue our activities on indigenous peoples, close cooperation with the Permanent Forum and its secretariat is highly appreciated, and we welcome this opportunity to address the forum. The Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is our shared tool and framework for action in this area, and activities of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights aim to strengthen the promotion and implementation of the Declaration. We are therefore pleased to see that support for the Declaration keeps expanding, including in the four countries that originally voted against the Declaration. The Office of the High Commissioner welcomes the endorsement of the Declaration by New Zealand this week, which, together with the endorsement of the Declaration by Australia last year, shows that consensus around the principles of the Declaration is strengthening further. In this respect, we are also encouraged by the recent announcement by the Government of Canada that it will take steps towards endorsement and the statement by the United States that it will review its position regarding the Declaration. Our written contribution to the forum provides details on the ongoing activities of the office, many of which reflect recommendations made by the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Let me highlight some of them. OACHR has stepped up its efforts to encourage the use of the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in the work of national human rights institutions. In December 2009, we organized an expert meeting in Bangkok, bringing together selected national human rights institutions and indigenous representatives, and which resulted in concrete proposals that are now being followed up. OACHR has also continued to address specific thematic and regional issues. These include the rights of indigenous peoples in voluntary isolation, a topic on which we are conducting consultations this year in Ecuador, Colombia, Paraguay, Brazil, and Bolivia. Our field presences are pursuing a range of important national and regional initiatives to advance the implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Caribbean, and all in cooperation with indigenous representatives, governments, as well as UN and regional partners. In addition to providing training, we have helped to enhance dialogue on indigenous issues between government and indigenous peoples. As you are aware, OACHR also supports a range of human rights treaty bodies, many of which have issued comments that are of great importance for indigenous peoples. By way of example, I would like to refer to the recent general comment by the committee adopted by the Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights on the right to participate in cultural life. This recommendation contains detailed references to indigenous peoples. The Human Rights Council Universal Periodic Review is another important mechanism that regularly produces recommendations on indigenous peoples. One central area of work for our office is to provide support to the Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous peoples and the expert mechanism on the rights of indigenous peoples. The office is, for example, contributing to the preparation of the second study of the expert mechanism devoted to the right to participate in decision-making, including by organizing a technical workshop in Geneva in March 2010. The workshop brought together experts, including representatives of the Permanent Forum and its secretariat, to discuss the content of the forthcoming progress report of the expert mechanism, which will be discussed at the third session of the expert mechanism in July of this year. Finally, let me highlight the importance of OACHR attaches to building capacity amongst indigenous peoples and to ensuring effective participation of indigenous peoples in relevant UN bodies. Our Indigenous Fellowship Program is one important tool to build such capacity, and it is also one of many areas where concrete interagency cooperation has been instrumental. Furthermore, we have continued to support the participation of Indigenous peoples in the expert mechanism on the rights of Indigenous peoples and in the permanent forum, including by servicing the Voluntary Fund on Indigenous Populations. Despite serious travel impediments encountered by many of them, beneficiaries of the fund are once again making an important contribution to the work of the forum at the present session. And I would like to take this opportunity to express our appreciation for their active engagement. Mr. Chairman, I would like to conclude by reiterating the commitment of the Office of the High Commissioner to improved implementation of the rights of Indigenous peoples and to express our appreciation for the constructive dialogue we are carrying out with the Permanent Forum as we pursue this common aim. Thank you very much.
A usted las gracias.
Thank you. We now give the floor to Victoria Tauli Corpus to make a statement. Ms. Tauli, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to take this opportunity to make some comments on what I have heard so far and also to make a few recommendations to the Special Rapporteur, James Anaya. First of all, I'd like to make a this is now today is the International Mother Earth Day, as has been announced, I think, earlier, and it's really a major development in terms of recognizing that we need to really take care of the of Mother Earth, and because this is the main source of what we are all about. I'd like to make a comment on the intervention that was done by our colleague from IUCN, Mr. Gonzalo Oviedo, on the whole issue of conservation and human rights. I think it's a very important development that there is now an effort among the conservation organizations to really integrate the issue of human rights in their work, because since we started the work of the Permanent Forum, we have always been receiving complaints about human rights violations being done among Indigenous peoples in areas where national parks are being delineated or in where conservation efforts are being done. I think this is a story that we continuously hear up to the present, and I'm not saying that this is mainly caused by conservation organizations. This is also caused by, of course, states who have gone into partnership with conservation organizations, and the main conservation ethic in the past, which says that you just have to keep out people from the parks because they are the ones causing the destruction of the nature of the forests, for instance. And it has already been proven scientifically that Indigenous peoples who have worked in their own territories, who have worked in harmoniously with their ecosystems, are the ones who have protected the biodiversity as well as the cultural diversity in their own territories. And this is the reason why, up to the present time, we have remaining tropical rainforests, marine systems which are protected because of the traditional knowledge, the indigenous knowledge systems of indigenous peoples that they have been using to guide their relationship with their whole ecosystems and nature. So I think it's about time, it's a very good time that now the conservation organizations have recognized the link between conservation and human rights, and I hope that there will really be serious efforts towards integrating these two concerns. Secondly, I'd like to talk about the issue of international Mother Earth rights or the declaration, the proposed declaration on Mother Earth rights. I think for Indigenous peoples, this is something that that they have practiced for so long. They have really been the ones protecting the rights of nature, the rights of Mother Earth. And this kind of development is very good. But I would like to also caution that there are pronouncements saying that the human rights era is over. Now it is the rights of Mother Earth, which we should be talking about. I think that's a very dangerous statement, because we know from what we are hearing here that there are still continuing massive and grave violations of human rights of indigenous peoples. So when we suddenly say that we are going to shift now to Mother Earth rights, this is really going to do a lot of disservice to indigenous peoples and undermine their rights. So I think I would like to request James Anaya, maybe as a lawyer, as an expert on indigenous peoples' rights, if you can please try to do at least an analysis of what are the what is the convergence between Mother Earth rights and human rights, indigenous peoples' rights, and what are the conflicts, potential conflicts that may arise in the process of pushing forward this concept. I think we need to be serious about this, because otherwise I can foresee that environmentalists who just care about nature will jump into this and they will start repeating the same mistakes that have been happening in the past. No, and this is not this is really not the right way to go about doing such kinds of initiatives. So that's my proposal for Mr. Anaya. And then finally, also considering that this is the International Year for Biological Diversity and the International Year for Rapprochement of Cultures, this is really the time to look at all these issues, cultural diversity, biological diversity, human rights, conservation, in a holistic fashion, so that we will be able to really see where are the convergences in all these different efforts and where are the divergences, the conflicts, because we can imagine that there will be lots of conflicts because interest groups behind all of this will be pushing for their own specific agenda. So these are just some points that I would like to raise, which I hope the special rapporteur will help us with, and also the expert mechanism on human rights. Thank you very much.
Gracias, señora Corpus. Vamos a proseguir.
Thank you, Ms. Corpus. We'll continue now with our list of speakers. I give the floor to Mr. Douglas Anderson of International Native Tradition Interchange of North America. Mr. Douglas Anderson, you have the floor.
Mr. Anderson, está en la sala?
Is Mr. Anderson in the hall? No? In that case, we'll turn to the next speaker, Ms. Banca Chancoso, the Andean Coordinator of Andean Organizations. You have the floor.
Masi pusak Carlos sumak na paita charipaichi tukui kunazati nyukami Ecuador mama zaktamenta kani sinapas kai urku kunamanda niska kai coordinadora andina tananahui pasutipi rimagripani. Gracias.
Thank you. To the Bureau, and my best wishes to the chair of this forum. I also want to commend the persistent struggle and work done by Vicky Tauli in the Permanent Forum. Having heard from the very first day in the introductory statement by the Secretary General of the United Nations, and also hear statements in the forum, I see that you're all extremely familiar with the situation of the indigenous peoples, the impact of the situation on indigenous peoples throughout the world. So perhaps I won't refer so much to the problems that we're facing. What I'd like to do is begin by saying that I've also heard the reports of governmental delegations and of different agencies here in the United Nations. I commend them for the time that they have dedicated to producing these reports. Nonetheless, I'm sorry to say that I don't find in any of the government reports and in the reports of different agencies some indication that they have responded to situations in which indigenous peoples have been at risk for so many years. We'd like to hear a solution to the problems. For more than 30 years now, an indigenous leader has been imprisoned because of his defense of our community. Family rights, the human rights of the family, are being violated, such as the case of Leonardo Peltier, who is in perpetual imprisonment. We also find in exile Alberto Pisango of Peru. There are trials and persecutions of indigenous leaders because of their defense of the land. This is the case in different countries and in Ecuador itself. So we want to urge you to do something concrete. In the reports of the rapporteur, in missions of the permanent forum, at least in the time remaining of the second decade for indigenous peoples, that there be the immediate release of those indigenous leaders that are in jail, so that at least we can bring happiness back to their families, their people, their communities. We also ask for the archives of the trials of different indigenous community leaders. Could you please close your statement? Yes, I'm aware of the constraints, but I do want to conclude. I don't think I've reached the 4-minute limit given to caucus organizations. I'd like to say that there's a need for a political will to be shown by governments to meet the commitments that they've adopted under the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Whether or not the declaration is binding in accordance with individual legislation of countries, it's important as a moral and political demonstration of the will of governments that have assumed this commitment, that they immediately apply it. And that relates to the right of consultation of indigenous peoples and prior consent when policies are going to be decided on the territory of indigenous peoples. There should be respect for the land of indigenous peoples. Respect for their territories is important. It's also important to move toward self-determination of the indigenous peoples. These are of great importance at this specific time when we're talking about a second decade. We're concerned because mega projects are threatening the very lives of the indigenous peoples. Could you close your statement, please? I'm very sorry. It may be that some things I'm saying here don't please everyone, but we're speaking on the basis of the mandate given to us by the indigenous peoples. It is the mandate given us by the struggle of our people, the blood that has been shed by our people, the mandate of the people detained. The World Summit on Climate Change, all of that is part of the mandate on which basis I speak. The important thing is, for the next decade, that we hear a different kind of report, in which important steps have truly been taken, that we not just be a place for complaint, but no action. Thank you.
Daremos paso a la lista de oradores.
Thank you. We'll continue with the list of speakers. The distinguished representative of Denmark, Ambassador Carsten Starr, has the floor.
And thank you for the opportunity to speak at this juncture. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank the Special Rapporteur for sharing his experiences over the last year, and also express our appreciation for the good work done and the cooperation that we have met. It's with great satisfaction that Denmark participates in the discussion of the Permanent Forum on the issue of human rights. The Permanent Forum can and should play a pivotal role in protecting and promoting human rights of indigenous peoples and in promoting the application of the provisions of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. It's therefore also with great pleasure that Denmark notes the rising support for the declaration, and we wish to congratulate the governments of New Zealand, the US and Canada for their positive announcements in the past days. This is very important development in the international efforts to advance the rights of indigenous peoples all over the world. Promoting and protecting the rights of indigenous peoples, as well as strengthening the implementation of the declaration, remains high on our government's agenda. Accordingly, indigenous peoples is listed a key priority in the strategy of the government's approach to international human rights cooperation. In this context, we are happy to inform you, and through you, the members of the Permanent Forum, that Denmark has recently doubled its financial support to the UN Trust Fund for the second international decade of indigenous peoples for the period of 2010 to 2013. Furthermore, Denmark has actively promoted the rights of the people of Greenland. Since 1979, Greenland has enjoyed home rule. In June last year, the Act of Greenland Self-Government entered into force after having been approved by the people of Greenland at a referendum held in November of 2008. With this new step, we are indeed implementing provisions of the UN Declarations of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. It's acknowledged in the preamble of the Act on Greenland Self-Government that the people of Greenland are a people with a right to self-determination under international law. The new Act on Greenland Self-Government opens for expansion and transfer of further competences and responsibilities from the Danish authorities to the Greenland authorities. According to Section 21 of the Act, decisions regarding Greenland's independence shall be taken by the people of Greenland. With self-government in place, the government of Greenland has a right to take over the responsibility for and competences over inter alia administration of justice and the establishment of courts of law, police, and mineral and oil resources. Public revenues from mineral and oil resource activities in Greenland shall accrue to Greenland. With self-government, Greenlandic has also become the official language in Greenland. As another example of the work which Denmark is doing to ensure the actual implementation of the declaration, we would like to draw attention to a Danish-supported development program on the rights of indigenous peoples, which after 10 years was recently completed in Bolivia. The program was based on a concept of popular participation and decentralization and involved indigenous peoples directly in the design of the development program and as direct beneficiaries. The implementation of the program contributed to Bolivia's adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as national law in 2007, making Bolivia the only UN member state to make the declaration legally binding. We hope that many of you will have the opportunity to participate in the side event tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. in room E on lessons learned from this joint cooperation program with Bolivia. Mr. Chairman, turning to the issues at hand, we would appreciate it if you could elaborate on your experience from your country visits and report on any substantial feedback from relevant partners during these visits. As an example, we would like you to highlight indigenous people's rights to free, prior, informed consent and to access and benefit sharing. As you have mentioned in your Nepal report, there are cases where these rights are difficult to enforce. For instance, during the establishment of protected areas where indigenous peoples have lost land. What has been the nature of the feedback that you have received on this matter so far? We also wish to strongly encourage you to focus on indigenous peoples of Africa. Your 2010 Botswana report is a sign, we hope, of your renewed interest in the African continent. Denmark places high priority in Africa, and we would like to follow up and support your recommendations in the countries where we are actually promoting or actually actively involved through our bilateral assistance. Denmark would like to voice our agreement on your report and statement from 2009 concerning the right of indigenous peoples to participate in decision-making processes as well as their right to free, prior, and informed consent on matters that have impact on their lives. We fully share your assessment as to what this right entails. In this context, we would also like to extend our gratitude to the chairperson of the EMRIC for her presence here today. We would like to stress the importance of continued coordination between the mechanism, the rapporteur, and the permanent forum. We're looking forward to the contribution of the expert mechanism to a more profound understanding of the issue of participation in decision-making. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, Denmark looks forward to following your continued work as special rapporteur, and we will continue to support your effort to advance the rights of indigenous peoples. I thank you.
Muchas gracias, señor.
Thank you, sir. And moving along with our list of speakers, I give the floor to Ms. Alejandra Ocles, head of delegation of Ecuador. Ms. Ocles, you have the floor.
Señor presidente.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today, as we celebrate the International Earth Day, my delegation wants to emphasize this fact in this forum because of the close relationship between the indigenous peoples and nature. Ecuador wishes to make an appeal to the governments and peoples of the world on this special day to respect Mother Earth and to live in harmony with her. Mr. Chairman, the rights of the indigenous peoples and nationalities of Ecuador have been reflected in the new Constitution of Ecuador of 2008, which recognizes the state as plurinational and intercultural. The enactment of this constitution gives definitive impetus to including in a united, inclusive way all Ecuadorians in a new form of coexistence in diversity and in harmony with Mother Earth in order to achieve sumac causai, or living well. In this context, the National Assembly of Ecuador has decided that 19 September of each year be recognized as the Day of Interculturality and Plurinationality in tribute to the date of birth of the deceased indigenous leader, Tránsito Amaguaña. The full exercise of these rights is indispensable for the existence, the well-being, and the full development of the indigenous peoples and nationalities. And for this reason, the national government is committed to creating the conditions necessary to facilitate their access to decent employment and living standards that make it possible for them to overcome exclusion and social inequality. Mr. Chairman, during the 8th session, we were very pleased to welcome Recommendation 9 on the Yasuni ITT initiative as an alternative source of income which seeks to reduce considerably the exploitation of natural resources, to strengthen the preservation of biodiversity, and to establish measures for indigenous peoples who live in isolation. The national government and UNDP this week concluded an important stage in the agreement of the terms of reference of the international trust system that will make it possible to attain these objectives. I would like to report to you that this important initiative is led by the Coordinating Minister of the Interior, Maria Fernanda Espinosa, an ecologist who is committed to the rights of indigenous peoples and to the protection of the environment. Likewise, my government, in December of 2009, invited Mr. James Anaya, the Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous Peoples, to obtain firsthand information on events that occurred in the Ecuadorian Amazon. The Special Rapporteur carried out an extensive program of work and had the opportunity to meet directly with the leaders of the organizations of indigenous peoples and nationalities. After that visit, the national government received from the special rapporteur a questionnaire asking for additional information and that information was sent. Furthermore, the national government, through the Secretariat of Peoples, Social Movements, and Citizens' Participation, is implementing, with a view to building an equitable, participative, inclusive Ecuador, a plurinational plan for the elimination of racial discrimination and ethnic and cultural exclusion. This is in the framework of Article 11, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution, which says that all persons are equal and will enjoy the same rights, duties, and opportunities. There can be no discrimination on the basis of ethnicity, place of birth, age, sex, gender identity, cultural identity. The President of the Republic, Rafael Correa Delgado, on 28 September 2009, signed Decree Number 60, which promotes a year to combat racism and discrimination. The plurinational plan is also coordinated by the coordinating ministries of the Interior, Labor Relations, and Communications Secretariat. In Ecuador, 8 out of 10 women suffer physical and psychological mistreatment. About 250,000 complaints were presented in local offices in the past 3 years, and 64% of deaths of women published in newspapers in 2009 were caused by male violence. Given this reality, the national government, through the National Plan of Eradication of Gender Violence against Women, Girl Children, set underway a campaign called Ecuador React, Machismo is Violence, so that the Ecuadorian population will understand that violence against women of all ages, economic, social, and cultural status is neither natural nor normal, that it's a violation of human rights that jeopardizes lives and harms the development of the country. In conclusion, sir, I'd like to say that Ecuador is aware of its commitments under international treaties and different international instruments, in particular the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And therefore, we support the important work of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Questions, the Special Rapporteur, and the Expert Mechanism. A year ago, on 22 April, the United Nations recognized the International Day of Mother Earth. And for this reason, I want to recall that human beings, the different ecosystems, and nature, or Pachamama, where life is reproduced and carried out, have a right to complete respect. Thank you. Thank you very much, madam, for reminding us that we're celebrating Earth Day, this very important day today. In conclusion, and with your understanding, we'll give the floor to Professor James Anaya and to Ms. Lasimbang to answer the questions and comment on statements made this morning. Professor Anaya, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, and I'd like to thank all those who have intervened this morning for their constructive comments. And for many of the recommendations that have been made, including those made specifically to me, a theme that we've heard this morning has been that of the ongoing lack of implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We heard the representative of the Youth Caucus refer to the declaration as potentially an empty instrument. And those words really, I must say, strike fear in me, as I'm sure they do in others, to see the declaration viewed potentially in that manner. In my first report to the Human Rights Council, I focused on the declaration and on the need for states in cooperation with indigenous peoples to take decided action to move forward with implementing the declaration. Of course, this is an intergenerational task. The violations of the rights of indigenous peoples are deep and systemic and widespread. And to eradicate the institutional structures that are in place that cause the ongoing violation of indigenous people's rights is not an easy task and will take a lot of work and cooperation over the years. I would like to acknowledge the steps that have been taken. We heard many of those today by states programmatic states to move toward implementing the rights in the Declaration. But of course, in these very states that come in today, many of which I have visited, there are ongoing problems and serious problems. And I would like to refer to my reports on these countries in Colombia, Australia, Brazil, in particular, also my reports on Botswana, Panama, Peru, the Bagua situation, and reiterate the recommendations I've made in those, recommendations for concerted action to address deep-seated problems that are ongoing in those countries. Finally, I would like to refer to the issue of development in relation to issues that are raised around conservation and education. In regard to conservation, of course, there has been, in many contexts, a tension between conservation programs and the protection of the rights of indigenous peoples in a very, I must say, ironic sense. Conservation programs that have sought to secure the natural environment while ignoring indigenous peoples' rights. And I'm sad to say that we see examples of this continuing in many parts of the world. And I continue to receive information, urgent information, about very problematic situations where indigenous peoples today continue to be forcibly removed from their traditional lands in the name of conservation. I'm glad to see that the International Union of Conservation for Nature is taking steps, along with other conservation organizations and entities, to try to better integrate human rights with conservation programs. And I urge that those initiatives become more than just words and take hold, indeed, on the ground. The Youth Caucus reminded us of the importance of education and of a culturally appropriate education, one that focuses on the worldviews of indigenous peoples and incorporates respect for their languages, which are also important, which are all important to indigenous identity, as we know. Of course, education is key in so many respects. It is a transversal right. It is difficult for many of the human rights that we talk of to be fully enjoyed unless this all-important right to education is fully realized. So I thank the Youth Caucus for reminding us of that and for reminding us of the future ahead and for giving us an optimism about that future, which is always needed. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Gracias, Professor Anaya.
Thank you, Professor Anaya. And I will ask Ms. Lasimbang, the chair of the mechanism of the expert mechanism, to comment. You have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for the comments. I'll also be brief. I could see that this through this interactive dialogue and from the recommendations and the long list of speakers indicate that there are very, very serious concerns and there's still a lot of issues regarding human rights that needs to be addressed. And I'm happy that the forum is one important avenue for this. I see also the growing work that the Special Rapporteur has undertaken, the concerns that or the measures that have been raised by states here is a way forward that we are going in terms of a dialogue. But also, I think it's really important for us to as Jim has said, the need to be able to implement what are the what's contained in the declaration. I want to have a number of issues that were raised, but I will just relate, as I said, we are a new body in one way, but we've already seen that the proposals and the findings of the expert mechanism through its thematic studies are very much in line with what has been raised here. The issue about the indigenous people's right to participate in decision-making is one aspect that I believe are key concerns to indigenous peoples. And I thank also the ambassador from Denmark to have said that this is a very important aspect of work that needs to be, you know, elaborated. I know that the forum has come up with very important guidelines. It's been given to UN agencies through the guidelines for the free prior informed consent. And I believe that is the elaboration in the studies that we are doing and the recommendations I hope that will come from you. It's a two-year study, as I said, and so that it culminate into measures and recommendations that we can all look forward to actually put into action. I also thank the representative who was talking about indigenous governance, the need and challenges that we need to do. Here, I believe that asserting indigenous governance, in other words, indigenous laws, institutions and processes, is very much part of the way in which indigenous peoples could affirm its control over how the development in their own territories. And I particularly hope that this could be something that we as indigenous peoples, as member states, the UN agencies could produce more reflection and how we can put them into action. Finally, I just want to refer also on the education. It's a study that we have, the expert mechanism has done last year. And I think beyond ensuring multilingual and culturally appropriate education in the mainstream schools, I think it's also very important that we are able to get political and financial support from states and donors for the establishment of indigenous people's own learning institution. That way, I believe that the intergenerational transfer of knowledge is continued and controlled by indigenous peoples themselves. I do believe that indigenous peoples themselves have to commit to develop and to promote indigenous ways of learning in your own communities. With that, I thank you again for the very useful comments and recommendations that were made. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias, señora Lassimbang.
Thank you, Ms. Lassimbang. I want to repeat my apologies for the problem we always have with time, the time constraints, and I appeal to you again that we all confine ourselves to the time limits because we have a very long list of speakers that have not been able to take the floor. Next week, we will reopen the floor on this subject. So I do ask you, the remaining speakers, to take the floor on the subject next week. As we conclude this meeting, I want to thank the Government of Colombia for the invitation extended to the Permanent Forum. We learned a great deal in the visit to the Charco, in the visits organized by Bolivia and Paraguay, and we're grateful to them too. And we encourage governments of regions where there are problems of violations of human rights of the indigenous peoples, mentioned by Professor Anaya, and also other regions of the world, Northern Europe or Asia or Africa, to invite the Permanent Forum. And the Permanent Forum will work, as you saw yesterday, in a constructive way with states, with UN agencies, and with the indigenous peoples in the search for joint solutions to the problems faced by the indigenous peoples, where our rights are violated, where territory is usurped, or where we might be excluded from education and employment systems. We, the indigenous peoples, have many problems indeed. In accordance with our program of work, this afternoon the Permanent Forum will take up item 5 of the agenda, half-day discussion on North America. We will again be hearing of the important bond with Mother Earth, and our meeting this afternoon will be in the General Assembly Hall. It is my intention to start the 7th meeting at 3 p.m. sharp for the best possible time management. The meeting's adjourned.